Good morning, Jen.
Good morning. It's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the What's the Temp podcast. My name is Bettina, and I am coming in hot today.
And my name is Jen, and I need to check in so I don't check out.
That is awesome. Glad you're checking in, Jen. I want to introduce today's episode by the title, and it is The Stuff We Keep. Today, we want to engage about our relationship to things. How you feel about that today?
I feel really good, except that I just looked at it. And you know how I never know what the spin on the temp check is going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And it said attachment temperatures.
Yes.
I'm not prepared for that, but I'm going to make something up on the fly like I always do. Do you want to go first for attachment temp?
I can go first for this one.
Okay.
So for attachment temp, I feel like the last 3 weeks I've been having perfect temperatures. I'm going to go with an oven temp on this one. And it's 350 degrees. It's perfect because I have a fluidity as it relates to attachments that I did not have years and years ago. And I got to give you a little backstory in order to explain that.
Do it.
So two things. One, when I was very young, like as a teenager and as a young adult, I was very materialistic.
Hmm.
I guess growing up, we kind of had an affinity for just clothing, shoes. Like we had every pair of Nikes. I don't know if you remember, there was a catalog. The name escapes me right now, but there was a catalog that we would order like first edition type sneakers from that we would then pair with the perfectly matched color coordinated outfits and then just could not wait to fall into the school, you know, quad and, you know, let everybody see. Like we just had this thing where it was about looking good and feeling good, but it easily bled over into materialism.
Mm.
And that went on for a while with me. It went on for a while and it kind of led to what I talked about in sobriety and clarity, you know, my little tiny, tiny stint with crime, right? But
yeah.
That materialism was a thing. And what happened was how I was broken from that was, you know how you had the jewelry. I had jewelry, just little things that I had accumulated. But everything was about back then. It was about the brand. It was about, you know, being seen. And it was like, basically, I had the mentality that the clothes made me. I didn't make the clothes, right? Now I have the outfit. I could put anything on my body and I make that. It doesn't make me. But back then, the brand or the price tag, you know, I was very, very much attached to getting my guest jeans from the Cooper Building. And, you know, it was just the things that we did as a culture where it just kind of made you fit in. But I also understand kind of where that mentality comes from. So I'm, you know, totally released from it. But what broke me from it at the time was I remember my first apartment had a cute, cute apartment and it was raided by the FBI, I want to say. But we were raided because of some criminal activity from someone that was close to me and all my valuable things were taken. And I remember crying and
crying. Wait, from your office?
From my house, from my apartment.
I remember you talking about this.
Yeah. So that happened. But I remember crying and crying and crying. I was crying for days. I was so sick. Like my shoes, my this dress, this brand, this label, this designer, this, all these stupid things, right? And I cried for days and days and days, just sniveling, slinging snot, like the whole thing, right?
Mm.
And I remembered when I finally came to myself, and it took a minute, but when I finally came to myself, I made myself a promise that I would spend my money on experiences because those couldn't be taken away from me. And that, that kind of changed everything for me, where I do have some, you know, nice things now, but it's like, if I have some YSL shoes, it's one pair, and it's because I had to have that one, and I'll probably wear them for 15 years. Like, when I buy my things, it's because I'm going to enjoy it, but not because I love it more than I love the people that are close to me. There's a natural fluidity, but what cemented that idea, the fluidity that I have now with my things, is because someone very close to me is a hoarder, a baby hoarder. I say a baby hoarder because the house is clean, but they just have way too much stuff, just way too much stuff, right? Mm. And because of that, I have like a minimalist attitude when it comes to my things. Like, if I'm going to use it, if I'm actively using it, it stays. If I get to a year and I haven't used the thing, then I will give it away, because usually all of my stuff is in really good condition. So I'll give it away to someone who'll make use for it. I'll give it to someone, and then I'll make room for something new in my life. But that fluidity that I have now, that I just appreciate in the way that I operate as it relates to things, to stuff, and my relationship to it. I'm loving that. I'm loving that about myself.
Okay, two follow-up questions. Mm-hmm. One, when the FBI raided, I thought you were at an office place when they came in and there was something weird happening with the company. And so they ended up basically being like, everyone get up from your desks. That was what happened.
Oh, no,
right?
That
just,
was
like,
a
on
job
TV.
Thing. No. That,
oh, that was totally
a job
different.
Thing. That was completely different. That had nothing to do with my,
so
my
wait,
life.
So why did they take your stuff?
Because one of my close people to me, they just suspected that I was hiding stuff in my house because the person was close to me from that person, which wasn't true.
And they never gave it back?
Girl, please, no. What you gonna do, go to the FBI? Because I was doing my own little thing, or had my own little thing concocted at that time. What am
I
gonna do?
So this one, you were really young.
I was very young, very young. Okay. I was in my early life, like probably 20 or 21.
Oh, okay.
Something like that.
And then my second question is, what was the thing that was the most precious to you that you just couldn't let go of that they took?
There was a ring. There was a ring that my, I use air quotes for grandfather, because he was like my aunt's dad, right? But he had given, it was very valuable. It was like a diamond and sapphire ring. I was very, very attached to that ring. Now at this age, I'm so glad that I don't have it, because that ring was an attachment to a lifestyle, or the idea of a lifestyle. He was very much into some activities that he shouldn't have been into. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have wanted to have a token of that in my life, kind of, you know, bringing the juju or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't have wanted to bring that. So now I can look back and be grateful that I didn't carry that piece throughout these past decades into my life. But that would have been that was one of the things that I just wanted to cherish and hold on to forever. And now when you look back, it's I've said this to my children and to people very close to me, that when I look back on the things that God did not allow, and I'm grateful, the things that I wanted that he did not allow, I'm grateful that that piece didn't travel with me. Because now that I know who that man was, I would have never wanted anything that he handed to me to be carried throughout these decades of my life.
Why did he give it to you if it was so valuable?
I was, you know, one of his favorites, and things like that came easy for him. So he was just like,
he had a lot
hey,
of things like
for
that.
You. He had a lot of stuff, you know, lots of property all over Los Angeles. So he was pretty well to do. But and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, this is such a great piece, you know, but I'm grateful that I lost.
But
that
it was
great
symbolic
piece.
Of a path you didn't want to go down.
Absolutely.
I don't know why it thrills me so much to have any proximity to a life of crime. It's so funny because Herschel told me one time, he's like, he said, I give you that little bit of street cred, and then he goes, you lack that. And I can't argue with that.
And when you really live it, you want nothing to do with it, to be
I
honest.
Know. Like, you know what it is? It's because you think of it from a place of detachment, where you're thinking of it like an episode of Law and Order or something. You're not thinking of everything that comes along with it, and because you're not emotionally attached to it. So for you, it's just entertainment because you're at arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But
yeah, so that was mine. That's mine. It's a perfect 350 because I don't love the things like I used to. I love the people. I love the experiences. I love the travel. And I am 100% present for those things. But the things can come and go, and it doesn't mean anything. Like, even for my pieces that I've been able to splurge on over the years, it's like, when I was at storage while I was in California recently, my daughter was laughing at me. She's like, "Mom, you really love your stuff." She said, "It's like you're unveiling the stuff brand new and you haven't ever seen it before."
Because I can picture it exactly.
There was a pair of shoes that I was lifting the box and it was like, oh, you know, lifting the lid to the box. And that was my sound effect, right? And she was like, "You're really enjoying this." I said, "I really like my stuff." And she said, "But Mom, I love your approach to it because it's like you like it, but, you know, it's okay that it's stuck in storage for a year." You know what I mean? Like, it's okay. It's mine. It'll be there when I get to it. And when I get to enjoy it or wear it or experience it, it'll be great too. And when I don't, that's okay too. Like, whatever is sufficient in the moment is sufficient for the moment.
Yeah. What I'm hearing from you is that you don't approach your stuff from a place of lack. Remember how we were talking about busyness coming from a place of lack?
Mm-hmm.
And instead approaching things from a place of abundance. I see your relationship with stuff to be the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think about aesthetics a lot and about beauty. And beauty is really a very high value. It's something that has been respected and honored in all kinds of different cultures. And it doesn't always have to be a superficial thing. So if you have something like these YSL shoes, there is something valuable, I guess, to use kind of a generic word, but about something that's well made. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about, you know, these shoes and you're just kind of approaching them with a sense of reverence, I can see why I'm not approaching my shoes from DSW from with a sense of reverence, because they're not special and they're not all that great and they cost $80, which is too much for that shoe. So I, as I've been getting older and had a little bit more money to throw around, sometimes I do see the value of getting a $400 sweater or a something. There has to be a real value add for me to have something like that. So with a sweater, that sweater better be the level of thickness that I have never seen at TJ Maxx.
Mm-hmm.
It has to have something really redeeming about it. So I'm not going to trade in just for a name or just, especially not for the way something.
Quality.
Yes, it has to be a quality thing. I've seen some cable knit sweaters that were purchased at boutiques in Soho that just to even just, you just want to run in and just give them a huge hug.
Mm-hmm.
They're just unlike anything. It's almost like a sculpture, but soft. Just they look different.
Yes.
They feel different. They have a weight to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm always after, but the quality of everything has really gone down. Even when I go to Banana Republic, which I feel like used to be good, it's like,
It was really nice.
It used to be that you could get, I actually had this sweater that someone gave me. It was very, very thick, and it was a hooded black cashmere sweater, but it was thick. Like, it was substantial. It had some weight to it. And now I go to Banana Republic just for whatever, shop for Christmas gifts for Herschel or something, and these sweaters are paper thin,
yeah,
man.
It's kinda
and they're
like the
same
throwaway
price.
Clothes now.
What's going on, fast fashion, Banana Republic?
Mm-hmm.
So
fast
not
fashion.
Cool. This is why I never buy new. I will never buy new again. I'm thrift all the way from here on out. Thrift all the way. Show me something that has, yes, I know you could never do it because you're Howard Hughes-ness, and I've been meaning to broach this with you because you could never
I can't even buy used books. So
you wouldn't even want to breathe the air in these places. I'm telling you, you would. I know you wouldn't come with me. If you came to visit me and I was like, "Hey, let's go thrifting," which is my absolutely favorite thing. For me, it's like, show me something that has been washed 100 times and I'll tell you what the quality is. I'll tell you what the quality is, because I don't like how if I buy something at Old Navy, you know, next season that thing is just limp.
Yeah, I can't stand that. I can't. But see, what I do is I kind of allow the right expectation. So a friend of mine is throwing a white party and I was like, how invested am I into buying a new white outfit when I probably have 12 of them in storage, right?
And I was just like, the fact that you have 12 white outfits, I have zero, just so you know, just for the record, I have zero white outfits. Zero.
And then I'm like, this is probably a dress I'm going to spend $40 on, and then I'll complement it with shoes that I have. And I actually have a pair of DSW nude shoes, like a strappy sandal that I'm going to probably wear to that with that dress, but and a simple basic bag. But I'm looking at things. I look at things like that. It's how much do I want to invest? Do I have to invest anything into it? And it's just I really feel like, I know it's not the minimalist attitude, but it's minimalism from a standpoint of abundance, if that makes sense.
You know, it's kind of where I am. The $40 thing isn't, but I think minimalism and really expensive things can play nice together.
Mm-hmm.
My brother says that you should only buy really expensive things, meaning in any given category. So let's say it's a sweater. You should mm-hmm. only buy something really, really expensive if it's if it has classic lines.
Right.
It shouldn't be something trendy and really expensive.
I can't
exactly.
Stand trendy.
Exactly. I mean, I wouldn't know trendy. My friend, it's going to be Joyce again. I swear I'm going to do one episode. I'm going to do one episode where I don't talk about her, but she really influences me. But she was saying, you know, when you just, she was giving me these huge just garbage bags and garbage bags of clothes, because just when she gets rid of things, she just goes all in. And she said two things. She's like, you know, when something's just not in style anymore. And I was like, first of all, no, because I never know what the style is.
I buy classics too.
I never know what the style is. And then she said, or if it's just something that you've just worn too many times. And I'm like, again, no. I have things in my wardrobe I've had for 20 years, and I still love them.
Wow.
Yeah, I never get rid of things for that reason or the other reason. But I love that you love your stuff, because to me, it just means you have this real reverence for beauty and that you're appreciating your things. If you think about the Japanese tea ceremony, the whole purpose of it is to approach each utensil with reverence, to honor it, to slow down and enjoy. It's not the same as, let's say, as a counterpoint, someone who has a shopping addiction who just goes and buys, and that kind of gives them that brief endorphin hit, that little high, and then they have to have something else. So then mm-hmm. that object ultimately becomes disposable. That's not the same thing. This mm-hmm. is loving yourself. This is experiencing beauty with every fiber of your being. And I love that you do that.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
So that's my temp. That's my temp on the stuff. What about yours?
So I was thinking of attachment. The way that it's hitting me today is attachment as a form of perfectionism, and I am going to give the temperature 400 today, oven temp. I'm also going oven temp.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because I'm just letting more things go. I'm moving away from perfectionism, not in terms of physical stuff, but just, for example, so my whole life this week is about this party that we're having on Saturday. So Nico
yes.
is turning one.
Yay.
And yeah, and we're having a huge party for, remember Maya's Indian wedding?
Yes.
For her first birthday?
Yes.
This is bigger. It's bigger.
Even bigger. Bigger.
Yeah, it's bigger. So Maya's party had something like 70, 80 people. This party has over 100 currently on Evite.
For a one-year-old's party. Oh my
yep.
gosh.
So when we're talking about community, the whole community is coming.
I love it.
Yeah, and it's going to be a real gathering. It's actually really funny because I have two, because my brother and I are so close in age, and because all of our friends intermingle, we have two different couples, high school couples, who will be reunited at this party for the first time in either a decade or more. I know, but they're not, you know, they're partnered with other people. So will
yes.
it be awkward? Will it not? I don't know. It'll be so fun to see. I hope I get to observe it. I'll probably be too busy, but it would be fun if I could be a fly on the wall. But so I've been noticing just letting go of more things. So I'm doing these centerpieces right now, and that's what mm-hmm. I was working on before I gathered with you today. And I went over, so just to keep on the community theme, I went over, and the Joyce theme, hi Joyce, I went to Joyce's parents' house. I was just at Joyce's parents' house before I came here because they were helping me with the centerpieces. And I brought over this little photo frame and it has a little picture of him in it. And I noticed that in the picture, you know how sometimes in photos or just in, I guess, like babies, lighter skinned babies, you can see almost like their veins through their skin. Like just you can see like a vein. He's not that light skinned, but maybe he hit himself somewhere. Whatever it was, there's this kind of blue that's between his eyes that's like almost ruining the picture. Mm-hmm. And I was like, don't care. Normally I would have gone and I would have bought a subscription to a photo editing app. I would have, you know, done some type of skin touch up on it to make sure that that bluish smear on his forehead goes away. Mm-hmm. Then I would have had to go back to print the photo again. And I'm just not attached in that way anymore. I'm thinking, good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And the sense of community that I have all around me is so incredible. So this is a slight departure, but just indulge me because season two is about community. So I called Joyce, and Joyce is in Maine, and I said, I need to do these centerpieces, but you know I don't have that design eye. And she's like, I'm making s'mores in Maine right now, but let me walk 50 feet over here to a different spot of the woods and leave my s'more making so I can help you brainstorm these centerpieces. How incredibly nice is that? So nice. And then I went over to her mom's house this morning. She gave me not only mirrored centerpieces, but three giant water decanters. I'm not sure if decanter is the right word here, but water dispensers, because I don't like water bottles. I do not like single-use plastics. And besides the fact that they're just horrible for the environment, I just think that they're a huge eyesore. I don't like the way that people take two sips from a water bottle and then they just leave basically full water bottles scattered all over the party. Yeah. Like, that is so ugly and I don't want that, and I don't want that in the photos. So what I'm going to do instead is her mom gave me these really big clear water jugs that come on stands. You know the kind you see at like a spa or a hair salon or something where there's a big water dispenser and it has lemon slices in it.
And cucumbers. So I'm going to do that.
Yes. So you can see the beautiful water with the fruit slices. And that's what we're doing instead of water bottles, because water bottles are ugly and horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then another friend texted me and she said, do you want me to bring a huge salad to the party? And I said, that really couldn't hurt, because even though we're serving Indian food again, I feel like people might want that as well, you know? But right now my sense of attachment is just letting all these, or non-attachment really, is letting all these people come around to support me and receiving the support and taking the help. And then also just not being all that attached to the fact that A, maybe the salad doesn't really go with the Indian food. Appetizers, they don't exist because we're just not doing them. Like, don't need apps, don't need cupcakes. So it's been really cool to not feel like my perfectionism is dominating my life, because normally I would be all twisted up about the fact that this party is in, you know, 5 days.
Yeah.
So my temp is a 400, because I'm a 425 and you're more at a 350. And I'm on my way down in temp because I'm just slowing down and I'm moving closer to being in balance.
I love it. I love it. And I love that your attachment, you consistently speak about improving the world around you, like the way your impact, your footprint on the world and the earth. You know what I mean? Like, you talk about your carbon footprint and things like that a lot. And I know that that matters to you. And so what I'm getting in listening to your attachment temp is that you're attaching to the right things. It's not necessarily things. And it's so strange that some of us can be so attached to things, but yet so disassociated with how those things impact the world we live in. And so listening to you, it has a holistic approach to it. And I think that's, you know, something that we should strive for. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
That kind of attachment. Or lack thereof.
That's a good insight. I like that a lot.
But I want to get into our backstory, which is I feel like we're both minimalists in our own, in different ways. So our different approaches to minimalism and what we each hold on to. You want to kick this one off?
Sure. My approach to minimalism is the Marie Kondo method. I've never seen her show and I've never read a single book, but someone told me that she says the way to clean your house or your apartment is to throw every single object you own into the center of the room, mm-hmm. and you pick up each object and you behold it and you ask yourself one question: does it spark joy? And if it does, you keep it, and if you cannot honestly answer yes, then you throw it. Mm-hmm. And that's always stuck with me. So even though I never consumed any of her content, that changed my entire life. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times I feel that I'll be talking myself into buying something. And if I'm talking myself into it, it doesn't spark joy. When something sparks joy, there's an affirmative yes. There's a resonance within the heart and soul that you're drawn to this thing and you feel sure about it. It's not mm-hmm. like, oh, I really like this shirt, but I don't like the way that the hemline is this. So the affirmative yes means this thing is adding to my enjoyment of this space. So I basically am pushing stuff out of my house all the time. Now I have kids, so now there's stuff coming in constantly, and I'm bringing it down to the thrift. Every single time I'm going down to the thrift, I'm pushing it out. When I do go to the thrift, I only will buy something just if I really, really need it. I typically mostly buy clothes. The other day I went and I had this incredible experience where I just found this basket that was calling out to me. I don't know why. It was like this very cool neutral color, but it had this also really cool grayish blue weaved into it. And I've just never seen a basket in those colors. And I accidentally forgot it at the thrift store. And then when I came home, I was still thinking about it because that's how much that object was really resonating with me. Mm-hmm. I wanted to put it in my son's room. I just knew I wanted it. And then the following day I went back and it was gone.
Oh,
I know. And I knew that was going to happen. And I was just devastated. I couldn't stop thinking about this basket. I do get very attached to things, but it's only just because I believe I made a mistake. My sponsor's mom always says, if I like it, I buy it. And I think that's what you should do. You should just trust, yes, I like this. Yes, buy this. The same thing happened with this metallic pumpkin I saw at Home Goods last year. I was thinking about this pumpkin for 6 months. I don't know why I didn't just buy it. I talked myself yes. out of it because
it was living rent-free in your head.
I know. And it's because I don't like metallic things.
Oh, yeah.
But I wanted it for my bathroom. Why didn't I just buy it? You could have returned it. You know how Home Goods is. If you don't buy it, it's gone. Mm-hmm. You should never not buy it there. So anyway, I'm still learning to trust my own aesthetic judgment because I'm still just learning what my style is and what my taste is. But I knew I loved this basket. It was gone when I got there. I was buying t-shirts. I'm into loose, flowy t-shirts this summer. I'm getting to a certain age where loose, flowy t-shirts is my jam. And mm-hmm. I wanted to buy like 10 of them for $20 and have it be my wardrobe for the entire summer. And then as I got to the checkout, I said, you know what? Let me just go back and check the basket section one more time just in case maybe somebody did return it there because I forgot it in a weird location of the store and it wasn't there, mm-hmm. but maybe somehow by some magic it would be there. And I went back and it was there.
Wow.
It was really like a shopping miracle. And I don't know if anyone appreciates this, but I turned that basket aisle upside down. So that means that in the hour that I was shopping for the t-shirts, either someone was planning on buying it and they returned it right to the front and center of the basket section.
Wow.
Or else it means that it was just somewhere in the back getting sorted and it just happened to arrive in the hour or two that I was at the store. The timing mm-hmm. of it, because remember, it was the following day. I left it like under a clothing rack somewhere the previous mm-hmm. day. So the fact that it was not there and then within the next hour-ish, it was back there was some type of miracle. It now lives on my center island in my home and it contains those microfiber towels that you use to wipe down the countertops every night.
Yeah.
So it's a functional thing, but it has a story. And most things Aww. In my home have a story. And I really like the fact that most of my objects are on their second lifetime. That's why I love thrifting so much. So basically, if I'm not looking at it and it's giving me joy, I don't really want it around. So even in this room I'm looking at right now, everything on my wall is from Habitat for Humanity Restore, which is this used furniture place. So you know, you have these pieces of art. It's like, where did this come from? It's signed by someone on the bottom. Isn't that interesting? Someone painted this.
Aww.
This is not mass-produced art. This is a special thing that someone, you know, poured their heart and soul into. And mm-hmm. here it is on my wall, me appreciating it.
So my approach to minimalism is different. I think with the work that I've done for personal development, I think about when I was in my materialistic phase and then trying to learn what to do after that, like what's supposed to come after that. How am I supposed to look at things and my relationship to them? What happened for me was realizing that I was trying to fill a void that only God can fill. Once I realized that, then I stopped trying to shove things. I stopped trying to shove the food. I remember becoming, talking to someone recently about, finding so much comfort in food when things were tough, finding comfort in food and just learning to fill the void with God and not other things and not material things or food or whatever the thing is today, a boy, you know what I mean? Whatever the thing is today, and just kind of put things in the right place. So I just got to the place where I agree with you about if it's not bringing me joy, move it along. You know, if I don't love it, even when I'm shopping, sometimes there might come the price of a thing. Like, do I want to spend that much on a jacket or do I want to spend that much on a pair of shoes or a bag? You know, how much am I going to use it? How much wear can I actually get out of it? Does it fall in the trendy category? And some things kind of fall on the line. And so I have a rule where I give myself 24 hours. I sleep on it. And if I feel that strongly about it, I'll come back and get it. Sometimes it's just not worth it. Sometimes it's just not that serious. But if I feel just as passionately about the thing tomorrow, I can pretty much guarantee it's going in my closet. But that also means I'm going to have the right relationship to it. I'm going to see it. I'm going to enjoy utilizing it. I'm going to enjoy when I say, oh, I remember when I picked up this piece at such and such. You know, remember that store that used to be, you know, that kind of thing. But it's to me, I'm finally in that place of right relationship to things. And it took me a minute to get there. So what I hold on to is, I remember there was a time when I needed to show people that I could afford something. You know, so it was like to go into a store on Rodeo Drive and then be given the side eye because of what you look like, only to be able to pull out the card and go, bam, give me that. You know what I mean? It was that. But that thing, that moment, it's just that. It's just a moment. But could you really afford the item? Could you really? Just because you can pay for it doesn't mean you can afford it. And so these are lessons that I had to learn. And then what space was that coming from? So as I did the work of just scooping out the junk inside of myself, I just learned to be in right relationship with my stuff so that I could have nice things or I could have not so nice things and love them all equally. You know what I mean? To me, that's so for me, all of my stuff is nice. You know,
I
talk about ordering stuff from Amazon all the time. And it's like, you might find some designer stuff, but going back to our conversation recently, when we were talking about, you know, learning how to dress your body, I stick with certain designers because I like the way their stuff fits or flows on my body or certain curves or certain not curvy areas, you know, just the way things work or flow for me. And I think that's the most important thing and not so much about the price of a thing or how much of a thing that I have, you know, and that to me is my personal right relationship with things.
It's interesting that you tend to gravitate towards talking about the things that you most love, at least that you've mentioned in this episode, are the shoes and the clothes. And the ones that, because I have basically no relationship with shoes or clothes, I think I own, if I owned 10 pairs of shoes, I'd be shocked. I don't even think I do. And if I do, mm-hmm. I only wear one every day, the same one. mm-hmm. And I kind of have a uniform, very Steve Jobs. Like I just wear basically black leggings. I've recently somewhat been incorporating other types of pants a little bit, but my uniform every day is some type of t-shirt and black leggings right now. That's just what I'm into. Mm-hmm. And, but the stuff that I
you're talking about is house
thinking
stuff.
About is objects. Yeah. So I'm not, I am the same in the sense that I'm a minimalist, meaning if you go into my attic, there is nothing there. I've been living here for 5 years. I mm-hmm. don't, the only thing that's in there that has to stay in there is boxes of photos because I had mm-hmm. to take the boxes of photos from my parents' house to store them here. And so those are storage. And then I have the Halloween bag.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have some baby stuff. But basically, even with the baby stuff, when we're done with it, it goes straight out the door. I don't mm-hmm. want to ever have an attic that feels unmanageable to me. So the only things up there are the bag of my winter clothes, the bag of Herschel's winter clothes, the bags of stuff, clothes that people have given me for my kids that they have not grown into yet. So hand-me-downs that are too big for my kids currently. And that's mm-hmm. it. So when you go up that ladder and you look around, there's the bassinet, which Nico has outgrown. There's the boxes of the photos. There's the Halloween costume bag. There's another holiday bag. And then there's the clothes that are the off-season clothes. And that's it. And then downstairs in the basement, I have my Christmas decorations, which are substantial. And those are all tucked away in this little crawl space in boxes that are organized. And those are things that are, like I was telling you, for me, it's about building the life. It's about the mm-hmm. life I'm building. So I want to, even though I borrowed the stuff from Joyce's mom this time, I want to have those water decanters for the party. I don't want ever want people drinking water bottles in my house. I'm just like that. I just hate single-use plastic. So at my house, we're going to have these really beautiful jugs that are decorative and they're clear and they're going to have lemons and they're going to be aesthetically pleasing and they're going to contain ice cold lemon water. To me, that's mm-hmm. better any day of the week than drinking some plasticky bottle that you're just going to throw in the garbage and it's going to land in the ocean eventually, you know?
And so for me, the same stuff I already have. So I'm not in like this evolution for my home life. It's so funny because I was talking about this recently with my daughters. I was like, my daughter spent $600 for her couch. And we don't think the couch is great. We were talking about the couch is functional, but it's not great, right? Mm. And I was saying the same thing about my sofa. I'm like, it's beautiful, but it's not the most comfortable sofa. Mm. And I spent the pretty penny for it, right? Mm. And I was like, I said, I want to be able to elevate my furniture to where I, and this is not something, this is where online shopping kicks you in the butt, because I had been looking for a gray tufted sofa for months. Mm. Finally found one that fit my, the space, and everything. You know, I found the perfect gray tufted chaise lounge and the perfect gray tufted sofa. But it's one of those sofas that if you sit on it too hard, you'll break your tailbone. You know what I mean? Like if you flop on that, because it doesn't have a lot of, it's gorgeous.
No.
But if you
that
flop on
matter.
It,
a sofa's
flop
about
on
the
it
feel.
Too, come on. That's what I'm talking mm-hmm. about. But at the same mm-hmm. time, it works because I'm the person that, you know, I want you to go home. After a while,
oh
I want you to
gosh.
Go home. So it's like, have dinner, get comfortable. But I'm looking at my watch. It's time for you to go home. So it's so funny because my home things are more static right now because I'm looking to buy property and it won't be, these things won't come into the
yes.
conversation until
you'll be in
I'm
my
there.
Place once you get your house and yep. you have to start building from the ground up yep. and you want to love every single object.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So it's yeah. we're just in different spaces at this yeah. time. Like, so right now the things that are kind of changing, like as I'm building for the seasons, you got to think I'm actually buying winter clothes because I live in a state now where I need winter clothes. That wasn't mm-hmm. the case in California. So right now,
yeah,
the clothes
you're building
are
your wardrobe, your new wardrobe
for yeah. the space that I'm in. So it's interesting. Even here in the summer, being here for summer, I still have to wear shoes that are breezy yet cover my feet because it'll be 80 3 degrees outside and thunderstorms.
Yeah.
So that's not just maxi dresses and sandals like in California and sunglasses. You know, I have to do things differently. So it's so interesting because the clothes are what's evolving for me right now.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah, but I want to go into our life focus question, which is how our relationship with objects reflects our relationship with ourselves. I might have already answered this, but you go. How our relationship with objects reflects our relationship with ourselves.
I'm discovering who I am through my acquisition of objects and clothes, actually. So yesterday when I went down to the beach with my sponsor's parents and my sponsor and her whole family, that's the family I spend all the holidays with. My family goes to their house for basically every single holiday almost. I love them so much. Oh my gosh. I can't even really explain to you my connection with them. It's extremely special.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, I was wearing this, you know, my shirt I told you about that I found at the thrift store. It's actually, I posted it in my, you know, I've posted on Instagram. I also have to give a little bit of not a disclaimer, but maybe an amendment. I said a couple episodes ago, one or two episodes ago, that I stopped using social media in 2017. And then it was bothering me because I thought, no, that's not true. I've posted to Instagram a handful of times in the past 7 years. I stopped using Facebook in 2017.
Okay.
That's what it is. I stopped using Facebook because Facebook is the type of thing, remember with the podcast when we're trying to post on Facebook and it's like, I'll post to 400 people and then there'll be like one like. Isn't that demoralizing? Facebook is too much for my ego.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I know I'm deprioritized because I haven't been on in 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
I did stop using Facebook when I got sober, but Instagram to me feels a little safer. I post on Instagram very sporadically. I don't scroll, but I do post sporadically big life moments because I'm just the type of person who likes to have a log. But anyway, there's a photo on Instagram. I posted it for one of our, it's the only photo of me actually that's really ever been posted for this podcast. And it's a picture of me and Nico and I'm wearing this shirt. It's a tie-dye shirt and both the collar and the sleeves have an animal print fringe. Now, I hate animal prints and I also don't really like tie-dye, honestly. I really don't. I haven't done a tie-dye since I was 8 years old. But I saw this shirt and my first thought is that is the ugliest shirt I've ever seen in my life. Can you imagine it? Tie-dye with a animal print fringe or whatever you'd call the collar and the sleeve. I thought that is the ugliest shirt I've ever seen. And then I just straight up did a total U-turn in the aisle. And then my next thought was, and I need it.
That is hilarious.
No, I don't know why, but I was just so drawn to it. And I couldn't explain it because I really don't like either of those patterns. But I have worn it like every day this summer. I love it. For me, my relationship with objects and with clothes is moving away from what I was brainwashed to think I want. So I think in my earlier life, I think there was a lot of brainwashing what type of fashion I should want to have, but I was so immune to it because I just don't really care about fashion that I never absorbed any of it. And that's why I have no fashion sense. But then in my adult life, I think I've been being brainwashed to think that a neutral color scheme for the home is the best. Because when you go to Pottery Barn or wherever, everything is always staged. Everything's always neutral. Everything's always in an oat. It's always in a whatever. And then for clothes, there's a lot of neutral too. I think neutral is very classy. But then my neighbor slash life partner, Sarah, who lives across the street, she's a major hippie granola type. And for a Halloween costume, I was a hippie this year for Halloween. And she has so many incredible clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that when she dropped me off that bag of clothes, I was just, everything had an outrageous pattern. There was like multiple purple peacock pants in there. Like it was just a crazy smorgasbord of things. But the fabrics were so soft. And the patterns were just exhilarating to the eye. And it just changed the whole way that I think about everything because I was like, I want to be that classy person like Joyce who can wear all neutrals and always look so good and everything's just soft and that she has these baggy, flowy clothes and they're all in neutrals. But I don't think I look good in neutrals. And my heart is screaming out for these peacock pants, the elephant pants. I want those. I think I have this inner hippie that's just dying to come out. And I want to wear things that are fun because I think my whole life I haven't been fun. I think I've always just been so depressed and sad and lost. And now that I just want to like let my freak flag fly. Yeah, why can't I say that? And so when she gave me this bag of clothes, I just kept putting on thing after thing after thing. And just like I said, they were just exhilarating. I was just like, I just want to live in this. Where is she getting these things from? And then my sponsor has all of these, I think they'd be called jumpsuits. It's like the one piece, either they're dresses or they're the dresses that look like pants.
But I have a long torso, which is weird.
No, me too. And that's why I really struggle. I have a long torso and short legs, not the one you want. If you could like genetically switch it around so you have long legs, that would be better. But which is funny that you love your legs. But yeah, she has all these jumpsuits and dresses that are this, I almost want to call them like an artisan dress. Sometimes they have multiple patterns on them. Sometimes they're just one pattern, but they're these really visually appealing patterns, and they're made of cotton. They're incredibly soft, not a thin cotton, but like a buttery cotton, like almost like how Lululemon pants are, but a little looser. But I can't find anything like that. Everywhere I go, every store, I'm looking for that and I can't find it.
I have a question. So why does it have to be a choice between the boho chic and the bold patterns? Why can't it be, this is how I feel today, this is how I feel tomorrow? You know what I mean? Like, I feel, I have a friend that has an amazing body and everything in her wardrobe, because she looks great in everything. Everything in her wardrobe kind of falls under boho chic. But I would love to see her in bold patterns. And you know what I mean? Just because she could get away with it because she's gorgeous. You know?
What are bold patterns? Like, what do you mean by bold patterns?
Like you were talking about, like some, you know, bright colors and, you know, mixed colors or mixed patterns and things like that.
Oh,
like
I thought
color
those were the
blocking.
Same thing. I thought like boho is a pattern.
Like a pattern. How I see boho is more flowy, muted.
Oh, muted.
Flowy, muted, almost colorless. And if there, and if it does have color, it's a very not a pastel-y, but very...
It would be like a sage green as opposed to a bright green. Yeah. Yes.
So for me, I'm into... I could do a little bit of both the electric and the muted. It's just... It just depends on the mood.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you're saying that, because I can see that as an aspirational thing. If I ever was to put enough time and energy into my appearance, I could see myself pulling out this incredible soft cotton dress that's really bright and hippie-ish for one day, and then a more muted neutral something for another day. I can see that maybe in the future, but right now what it is just that I don't have the time or the energy. I don't want to invest the time or the energy into how I look. I know that we said in, you know, it's, I don't know, I guess I don't prioritize that. So it's hard to imagine. I just like to have a uniform. So every day I go into my drawer, I grab a pair of black leggings, I grab a t-shirt, whichever color I'm in the mood for, kind of, so on a smaller scale. And then I throw on my flip-flops because it's summer, and then out to the door I go. Hopefully I have my hair done and I look semi-presentable at the end. I don't think that deep into it. I really love the way that Steve Jobs, like, if I could just get away with wearing the exact same thing every day, that's what I would do.
Oh, wow. And I think I'm like that during my work hours, but when it's time for play, it's on. Game on.
Yeah, maybe as I build confidence in putting outfits together, that might change. But right now, it's unthinkable that I would ever spend more than, you know, 30 seconds thinking about what I'll wear that day. Because I work from home, too, so it's just not my priority.
Yeah, whenever I have a speaking engagement, I kind of dress for the brand. So my dresses are like navy blue. I have a navy blue jumpsuit. I have several navy blue dresses. Like, that kind of fits like the website and the brand, you know? But so I kind of have I know what shoes and bag and, you know, what hairstyle. So it's kind of like the uniform you were talking about. But like I said,
you have
when
a wardrobe
I'm
too of
out,
established choices.
Yeah, but when I'm hanging out with friends, it's what kind of mood am I in and what feels good for this event. And that's what I love. So for me, how my relationship with objects reflects my relationship with myself, it's more about just recognizing that, you know, different people have different ways to feel secure. So I feel like a person that hoards a lot of things is just filling up something, right? And so for me, with my minimalist approach or buying the things that I love approach, it's where I love the things I have, but I'm not in love with them. I used to be in love with the things, and I feel like I love them more than I loved people. Or, you know, my relationships, I stewarded that stuff better than I stewarded the relationships and the other things, even myself, even my relationship with myself. And it's just different. All of that is flip-flopped now to where I feel confident in what I have. I love the things that I have. And if I don't absolutely love it, that's probably going to change. But it's like I can take my time and find the peace that I love that'll fill that space. Remember when we were talking about Christmas decorations? That's one of those fluid things that I'm like, oh, I think this year I want a lavender Christmas. And then I'll spend time getting all
Christmas
the
decorations. What? And then when will you revisit lavender again? And where will you put all the lavender stuff in the
meantime?
It's
just, I might do it 5 years. It might be 5 years before I revisit it again. But I just being able to have the option. So if I was to splurge on anything, and if anything seemed like I'm looking forward to doing a rose gold Christmas.
What does that mean?
A rose gold Christmas, meaning the things are kind of going to be that pinkish gold.
Oh, rose
with
gold.
Rose gold. So,
got it.
But my thought is I'll like be able to alternate every couple of years. Like this one worked really well. I want to do a black one. All black, you know? So I just want to have flexibility to be able to do what I want to do and then have the storage space to be able to keep this is all the stuff that fit. And these are the things that can kind of fit anywhere, you know, wherever you put it. So, but it's like, but what I love is it's not an attachment. It's just about having the options.
You Makes just sense? Have fun with it. And I
want to have
me,
fun with it. You saw my Christmases. Like I want to enjoy
fun
it.
With it. I have fun with Christmas, but with clothes, that just stresses me out. There's this composer called, his name is Eric Satie, and my brother told me that he just bought 7 identical purple velvet suits and wore those to the exclusion of all other clothing for 7 years. And during that time, he called himself the Velvet Gentleman. And when I read that, I was like, that is me. That is me.
I have fun with it, though.
To a T.
It seemed like he was enjoying
that.
And who's
fun.
Ever mad at that?
I think that that is fun because it's breaking social norms, and I find breaking social norms extremely fun.
Yeah. Uma dedicação a todos os trabalhadores ao redor do mundo que acordam cedo para o trabalho árduo. Para você. All right, let's go into these recipes. Today's recipe is the one pot wonder. The one pot wonder. What do you have?
Okay, I'm so excited about this because I have two themes that converged in one. So number one is that you had been saying, I think, 2 episodes ago, how whenever you manifest something, it just comes to you. So the gym membership came to you and the Milanos and the chips came to you. So I had said, I think it was on that episode, that I don't have a one pot slow cooker recipe that's vegetables that – because vegetables would just turn into mush. So this is not a slow cooker recipe, but we were at Herschel's aunt's house on Sunday. We went to go visit his grandmother and his aunt, and it came to me. So she served up the most delicious Indian food. You know, home-cooked. I don't know if you know, home-cooked Indian food and restaurant Indian food are very different, at least the way that we eat them.
I but can't wait to find it out.
They're both
for
equally
myself.
Delicious, honestly. But there's just something extra special about that home-cooked. So she served up... It was basically this vegetable dish. It was very simple. It was a one-pot vegetable dish, and then it came with this basically toasted – it was a stovetop toasted buttered roll, but it was an Indian bread. And what you did is you just spooned the vegetable mixture, or you could just dip the roll into the vegetable mixture. It almost looked like a little bit like a chaat masala, like that chickpea dish. But okay. It was, the vegetables were smaller. They were kind of all crushed up. It was so delicious. And then what they do with Indian food that I'm obsessed with is that they take red onions and they just basically give you an entire container. In this case, it was a bowl of just red onions. And all they have on them is that they have salt. Usually they'll use black salt. It's called black salt if it's an Indian family. And then they'll use chili powder. Or sometimes if I'm making them, I'll use chaat masala. But she just used chili powder. So it's just chili powder, salt, and lemon on red onions. And they're just in a bowl. And then you just pile them onto your plate. So what I was doing, because I'm very big into the articulation of food, like remember the honey harissa chicken? It's like take the tzatziki sauce and you spread that on the pita, then you put the piece of chicken, then you put the vegetable salad. Like I like stacking things and mixing and mingling things. So it was the perfect thing because I would take this little delicious toasted buttered roll and I would just spoon a little bit of the vegetable mixture on top. And then I would top that with like three little red onion slices just in a little teepee shape. It was amazing. It was just an amazing experience. So I have that recipe to share with us today. It's called pow budgie. I know I'm butchering that. Every time I say it, pow budgie. That's how you say it. I asked Herschel 10 million times, and every time I say it, he's like, it's budgie. But I don't know. There's a certain syllable that I struggle with. And this is how it goes. So you will take 4 to 5 medium potatoes, 1 chopped cauliflower, 1 cup chopped cauliflower, 1 cup chopped cabbage, 1/4 cup carrots, green peas, 3 medium tomatoes chopped. So that's a lot of chopping, but you basically throw that all in the Instant Pot with 2 tablespoons of oil, and then you add garlic paste, which you would love, right? And then you basically just kind of simmer that for 2 to 3 minutes. Then you add the budgie pow masala. I don't know. I can just write it down. It can be any brand, but it's a spice packet. And then all the vegetables, and you add 1 cup of water and a little bit of salt, and then you just throw that in the Instant Pot for 8 to 10 minutes. And then when it's ready, you add, get this, butter, yes, chili powder, lemon, salt. So it has this little bit of brightness to it. It's this vegetable mixture. You have to get this type. It's actually a type of bread that's also for pow budgie, and you have to get the Indian store. So you kind of do have to have the Indian store nearby, and isn't that kind of the nature of why you can't easily recreate ethnic foods is because you need particular ingredients. So you do need the spice packet and you do need the bread.
The bread. And what kind of bread? What is the bread called?
This one in particular was called Mumbai Pow. But it's pow is spelled P-A-V.
Okay.
And then budgie is spelled B-H-A-J-I. So this is called Mumbai for pow budgie.
Okay.
And it's so good. I can't pronounce it, but it's so good.
You better give me an ethnic dish, girl. Especially after last week we talked about dressing and stuffing. So I'm loving this.
Yes.
I'm loving this.
It's just wild. And it's so funny because then Herschel was like, this and samosas are my favorite thing. And I was like, what? I don't know how. I've had Indian food 1 million times with this family. I've never encountered this dish. So I'm going to rotate it into our dinner rotation. And it's going to be one of our family meals because I want my kids to be more in touch with their Indian heritage. Like, they're half Indian. And yeah, so I'm going to start learning to cook Indian food. And it's going to be amazing. What's yours?
So mine is really simple. I just wanted to give a little disclaimer, though, just like a check-in. The other day, I went to a new store that I had not visited since I've been in Indiana. And guess what I found? I found a harissa sauce. And I thought about the honey harissa that I've been wanting. Because I've never seen it at my regular stores that I frequent. So this one, it's much bigger. It has just many, many more things. And I was so excited to pick up a harissa. And I was going to send you a picture and not say anything, but
that's awesome. How,
what did a better way to tell you here.
Did you get the tzatziki too?
I did.
Amazing. You're ready to go then.
Super excited about those too. But
you got the Mediterranean flatbread as well?
No, I did not. I haven't gotten that yet, only because I don't know when I'm going to put it in rotation, but I'm going to do the chicken and I'm super excited about that. But what I'm going to do for today is a 1-pot chicken and rice, which I'm so excited about, like a creamy chicken. And it's so simple because when the kids were all at home, it was just so much easier to do things in one pot. So yeah. My one pot chicken and rice would include putting some rice in the slow cooker, like a 2 cups of rice, white rice, long grain rice in a slow cooker. I would put chicken breast and thighs because thighs tend to be more juicy. Breasts seem to be more dry, but I prefer the white meat. Some people prefer dark, and I just like to be prepared for both. And I would put some cream of mushroom, a can of cream of mushroom soup or a can of cream of chicken soup. Whatever you have on hand would work fine. I would, you know, of course, add me some chicken bouillon. I'm not doing much of anything without chicken bouillon. I would add some onion and some broccoli pieces, like frozen broccoli, and some cheddar cheese, shred up some cheddar cheese. And that is how I do my, and I'll put all the specifics down in the show notes, but that is how I do my creamy chicken and rice. And if I'm really feeling like extra cream, I'll also add a little bit of heavy cream at the end just to make sure that it's giving me the consistency that I want. But it was just one of those things that I could cook. Like, you know how I had a slow cooker that was also a pressure cooker, but I could set it to start at a certain time. So I would set it to start for like 2 o'clock, but by 5 o'clock, this dish was perfect on low. And it was very, very perfect where we could come in. And with my kids, I would also make, you know me, I'm a both and girl. So I would also make like a can of biscuits or have some dinner rolls. But it was just that quick, fast, delicious, filling meal that was just a one pot wonder. And it was one of our favorite go-tos when the kids were all at home. And I'm so glad I thought of this because I need to make that. I need to add that back into my regular rotation of cooking now that I cook so much in Indiana.
Love that.
So that's mine. Listen, thank you for joining us for another episode of the What's the Temp podcast. We really like you being here and I hope you like being here with us.
I love hearing you make up things on the spot. It delights me. It delights me. I'm just so glad you do the intros and outros because they make me smile. So spontaneous.
I hope you like being here with us. So listen, be great on purpose, okay?
Have a great 24. We love each and every one of you, and there ain't a damn thing you can do about it. That's my one curse. Bye.
Bye.